We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, we're doing the Dad Pod. It's Doc here and Mark Hiller from WBRE Eyewitness News. Good morning.
Good morning. I brought the Dad Bod to the Dad Pod. Oh,
that's kind of where the name came from. That's why I'm doing it for me, actually. First of all, I want to introduce you to a lot of people, know you already in the market, but we're going to learn all about young Mark Hiller up to Mark Hiller, that's the dad right now, and grandfather, which I just learned.
Grandfather, yes. I have two grandchildren. My grandson David is 5, and my granddaughter Evelyn is 1. They both had their birthdays in April.
That is so cool. Well, let's talk about you. Let's start with you. And when you were little, where'd you grow up?
I started off in Scranton.
Nice.
I was there for about the first 10 years, and I love Scranton.
Yeah.
It was great. It was such an idyllic time, too, Doc. It was just
well, yeah,
such
you
an
and I are like
time.
The same age, so we're talking about, growing up and how it's different. Like, is the neighborhood, have you been back to your old neighborhood? You probably have, right?
I have. Just to reminisce a little bit, just to drive through. It's weird because back in the day, the Scranton Redevelopment Authority wanted to buy out those properties, including right. my mom's and dad's home, because of mine subsidence. So that went through. All the properties were bought out. And then they built new properties.
So they never did anything about what you thought they would, right?
Not really, no.
Was your family trying to fight it when they were, they didn't want to move, or they did want to move at that point?
Not too much. There were things going on in my family. My mom and dad ended up divorcing when I was almost 10 years old. Hmm. So as the family was splitting up, the house just became right. Unnecessary casualty.
It's funny. I grew up in the Bronx, so we had in my neighborhood, there was one family who said, I'll never sell this house. And then McDonald's came in and decided they wanted their land because it was right at an intersection. It was the perfect place to go. And the dad was like, we'll never sell. We'll never. Well, I guess McDonald's, gave them the offer they could never refuse, and they ended up moving to Westchester then to a beautiful home at that point.
Lifetime of Big Macs.
Eh? Yeah, but it's funny. You go back to the old neighbor. Like, I went back to my old neighborhood a few years ago, and to see what it's done, I remember when as a kid, you could go out and play, your mom would scream, and everybody'd come home at night, and that kind of thing, and you were gone for the day, nothing to worry about.
And boy, that's the way it was, and it was great. Yeah.
And then it changed, and then it got to where you almost couldn't let your kids out in front of the house. I noticed in the Bronx where I'm from, though, it did change back again, but it's funny to see. I'll occasionally, if I'm in New York, I'll drive by my old house, and now there's bars on the windows and, an entrance on the steps,
yes.
And that's all barred off, and that whole neighborhood became that. And it's sad because I remember playing, stickball. In New York, we would do that, play stickball out in the street and all the games you played out in the street, and, things got so different.
Oh, that's a dagger through the heart. Bars on the windows in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, it's got to be, I guess, now.
Yeah.
But it's funny. My neighborhood, my old neighborhood, actually started last time I was through, people cleaning it up. And when I took my kids there probably 6 or 7 years ago, they didn't want to get out of the car. They were afraid. And now you went, it's not too bad. So it's kind of neat.
Well, that's good to see it coming back.
So after Scranton, where did you go?
Mm-hmm. Went to Taylor. And it's strange. In all the places I've lived, Taylor probably feels the most home to me.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my formative years, from the time I was 10 until I moved out when I was 21. So I graduated through the Riverside school system. Loved
right.
that. Loved the schools. Loved everybody in town.
Yeah.
Fell in love with baseball when I moved to Taylor. That wasn't something when I was in Scranton.
Really?
So played lots of pickup games, coached Little League.
I did that too. I was a Little League coach for a while.
Yeah, I started coaching my brother, and then when my brother graduated from Little League, we both ran a team and for a number of years. A lot of fun.
What was your goal when you were a kid? Did you want to be a baseball player?
I sure did.
At one point, yeah.
Oh my goodness. I thought I'd be this late blooming discovery. No.
Yeah, my dad actually, and it's funny, I thought the same thing. I wanted to play for the Mets. That was my goal in life. I wanted to either be a New York City fireman or play for the Mets.
So wait a minute. I've known you all these years. Are you a Mets fan?
Well, I am. I am a Met fan, but
growing
I'm also
in
I lived in
no
Philadelphia.
Wow.
So, well, I'll tell you why. So my dad played on the AAA level, and he got to try out with the Yankees. So somewhere there's a picture in someone's house in my family. So I remember my dad telling the story. When he got up to bat, this is only at a Yankees tryout. Whitey Ford was pitching, and Yogi Berra was catching. And my dad was a good hitter, and he was a good fielder, but apparently he was a lousy runner, and they cut him. And so this was I guess 57. I was born in 59, so it was like 1957 or so. Well, my dad then hated the Yankees because he thought at that point. And then in 19, it was at 58 or 59, the Mets came along. So I was brought up a Mets fan.
Can I tell you my Mets story?
Yeah.
My dad worked for Greyhound Bus Lines, and the New York commuters would leave their New York papers on the buses as they were coming into Scranton. And my dad would bring home those newspapers.
Yeah.
So back in the 60s, late 60s, you know, what were the teams that were winning? It was the Mets. It was the Jets. It was the Knicks. Right. So these are the teams I've been cursed with.
Yeah, it's sad to bring it up. Poor Mets haven't, you know, struggling right now. But then when I moved to Philly a few years ago, I became a Phillies fan and stuff like that. But yeah, it is interesting, but I never took a love to the Yankees. And I grew up probably 20 minutes from Yankee Stadium. I was a lot closer to Yankee Stadium than I was to Shea.
I dated a girl who lived 15 minutes from Shea Stadium,
mm-hmm.
Richmond Hills, Queens.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is meant to be. Well, it wasn't, and the Mets haven't won. So.
Yeah, the curse, right? The curse of Flushing, New York at that point. So when you met this girl, was this high school or this was college?
Yes, through college.
Where'd you go to college?
Marywood.
Nice. And you went for what?
Radio, TV, communications was the degree back then.
Uh-huh. That's pretty exciting. Yeah. And then, of course, I didn't know this about you till I was reading the other day. You've done radio.
I have, yes.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's strange because when I went to college, I really wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. But during my senior year of high school, I took a media class, and that kind of perked my interest. So whatever I filled out on that questionnaire when you're going to college, that ascertainment, they must have determined where this kid needed to go. So they put me through radio classes, and I fell in love with it. You know, worked on the college radio station my first semester freshman year. And it was during summer vacation between my freshman and sophomore years where I was kind of quote-unquote discovered.
Mm-hmm.
There was a television station in town and in Scranton, and they were looking for a part-time hire. And they happened to stumble upon my air check, because I didn't submit it.
Right, right. So what was your air check, though? Was it from doing college radio or something you went in a studio and created?
It was something that our college station program director, who had been working professionally, knew that I was doing one of the shifts and thought that I might be a good fit. And so he, unbeknownst to me, did an air check of me on the air, sent it up to the station, got an interview, almost rejected the job because I thought, I think I want to work in television.
Yeah.
But what a mistake that would have been had I turned that down.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up working in radio for 6 years.
Which station were you with?
I was with what was formerly known as WWDL-FM and WICK-AM. So these days it would be The River.
Okay.
On the FM dial for those in the Scranton market.
So wait, WWDL, wasn't this, because I remember Rusty used to tell me this all the time, was that for Doug Lane, who is the owner? Is that what
it
was named after?
Yes, it was.
The call letters came from?
Yes, yes.
So what was it like working there?
So September of 79, I was hired there. It was great. The one thing that I can say that really helped me the rest of my career was the discipline and the responsibility workers had to take. If there was a mistake, it wasn't just one person's fault. It was the entire chain.
Yeah.
And so it really made you a responsible person. So for that, I will ever be in debt of being hired there. It was just a great experience.
Do you remember your very first day going on live radio?
Well, this is the thing about WWDL. They were an automated system.
Okay.
So we would do live pop-ins every so often. Most of my live remembrances are from college.
Yeah.
Yes.
How nervous were you when that started?
Oh, gosh, right? I mean, even like the first day in television, the nerves are on high. And I think it's even that way with the first time you take a job somewhere. You know, with all your experience?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
When that first day, whether it's coming back as you did to Scranton or...
Even though I'd been here this my third time, I was still nervous when I came back. I still remember my first radio job was at a radio station called WALL, so Wall in Middletown, New York, is my first full-time radio job. And the same deal. And even though it was a low-power AM station, it was a top 40 station, and my owner, my boss, I don't know if you know much about New York radio, was Cousin Brucey, who was on WABC.
Oh, my word. Yeah, so legend.
He's the guy that hired me. And I remember, and Bruce always had this incredible when he talked. And I remember sitting in his office that day, and I had a job. I worked in Manhattan in New York, and I worked at a company that did TV commercials. But I was in the shipping department. You know, my goal wasn't to be on TV or anything like that. But I remember Bruce, and I was making $240 a week, and this was 1981. And then he hires me, offers me the job, and I was thrilled because that's what I wanted to do. But he goes, normally I start them at 140 a week, but I see you got some talent, boy, so I'm going to start you 150 a week. And I was like, great. And my mother, I remember telling her, and she's like, but, you know, that's, you were making 240. Now you're going to 150. I know, but it's radio. I told her all this. So I starved a lot, you know, as things got started. But I remember that first day, and I was on 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. was my shift. So on a.m., you even lower power more. So I think I was at 250 watts. So I served the town of Middletown, but I was so horrible and so bad. And the girl I was dating at that point, we ended up getting married. And she, of course, her parents were like, well, you're not moving away unless you're married. So we kind of rushed the wedding. We go and we get married. And the first day I said, did you listen? She goes, because she didn't unpack anything. I see everything in the house all still in boxes. She goes, you absolutely suck.
Oh, no.
You're going to get fired. And I was really bad. But as the time went on with the company, so I worked for Bruce for 2 different years, 2 different radio stations. But the same thing. I just remember that night I was so sick to my stomach and intestines because I, you know, as every hour got closer to 8 p.m., I was so ill because I was so nervous. And then after your first job, you're still nervous, but nowhere near like that. But yeah, I just, that was some feeling.
But that's what it's all about, right? You cut your teeth, you gain your experience, and here are today, and here we both are.
Yeah, exactly. And we're doing really good. So then, all right, so you're doing radio, and then you decide, where does TV come in your career?
As much as I wanted to do it, I wasn't sure if I was ever ready. And that's kind of always been my, my insecurity in life. Like, am I ready for this? Sure. Is this the time? And I got a call out of the blue from a friend who said that we are looking for a part-time weatherman at WBRE. Right. And I remember you from college. I remember you doing weather that one time. And I can tell you that you are better, from what I remember back then, than anybody who's been in so far to audition.
Because back then, though, right, it wasn't meteorologist per se. It was
right,
like
right.
Vince Sweeney was not a meteorologist. He was a weatherman, correct?
Right. Yeah. Right. AccuWeather would provide us our weather service. Right. So on a lark, on a whim, I went down and auditioned, and, you know, I was a radio guy, so you know what the wardrobe is like in radio.
Hell yeah.
Right? So I didn't even have a suit.
Yeah.
I wore a sweater vest and a tie. I did shave.
Yeah.
I did cut my hair.
You have that one suit for funerals and weddings. That
was
have
it,
home.
Yes, the unisuit.
Yeah.
And I got the gig, as we say. Yeah.
So what was the gig? What was it?
It was doing weekend weather. So that was February of 1985. But there's an interesting story, if you've got a little time here.
Oh, yeah. No, we're good.
Doc. I won't mention any names, but WBRE was going to announce a new nightside, full-time, five-day-a-week anchor team.
Okay.
The anchor was Vic Vedders, and he did work in this market for a few years. Mm-hmm. And there was this certified meteorologist. He was going to take the job. And when both of those two individuals were to be introduced at this highfalutin fair at the Westmoreland Club, right across the street from WBRE, Vic handed our news director a note that had been written by this meteorologist who said, I'm no longer accepting the job.
Wow.
So
does that open the door?
It did open the door, a domino effect. So so what happened between essentially from, I don't know when the streak started, February or March into June, I worked 61 out of 62 straight days at WBRE while still juggling full-time radio duties.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting time, but then I was hired full-time in June of 1985.
Yeah. And why did the guy not come? Just he went for another job somewhere else?
Bigger and better.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Boston, I think, is where he landed.
Yeah, well, Boston's a nice little stop.
Well,
it really
is. Little town, yeah. You've heard of it.
Yeah, but that's really neat. Now, I remember, I'm trying to think of the anchors. Well, I moved here in 1988. Who would have been the main anchor in 88? Who was the
That still would have been Vic Vedders at night. We launched our morning newscast in January of 88. So I was doing morning and midday weather back then. Our female anchor in the morning, her name is Brenda Garten.
Mm-hmm.
Did weather, Jerry Baum, legend.
I remember Jerry Baum.
Decades working at WBRE. He did morning sports and did general assignment reporting during the day.
How different is it between now and then?
Oh,
Like I still love, and you're probably going to say the same thing, but I do. I love what I do every day. I'm excited, but it's not the same as it was. Maybe I'm just getting older and I'm not involved in all the stories along the way that always happen, but I always seem to have greater stories from when I was younger in the industry of radio than what I'm in now. And it's been, you know, changes, some good, some bad, but, you know.
I still very much love what I do, but the layers of work have increased
right
through the years. And it's not that I'm a slacker, but it's just that be trying to do more with less.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing in radio right now.
And our industry is going through a wave where we're hiring a lot of new people who don't have that level of experience that was once required
right
to work in a market of this size.
And I do, what size TV market is this?
I believe we are now 56. So it's based upon population.
Correct.
So when I first started at WBRE, just to give you an idea of the dwindling population, I think we were 45.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
we
it's
were top
what
50
TV, more. How many counties is that? Is that like 19 or some crazy number?
19, yeah. And that, you know, they play with that number. It used to be 22. I remember the time there was 22, but it's 19. It's the Poconos. It's the part of the northern tier.
Williamsport too, right?
Yep, pretty all much, the way yeah to Williamsport, even Clinton County.
Yeah, we radio, it's five counties. So, you know, pretty much what you see here, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, then you go out, you know, Stroudsburg, Columbia County, that whole area. So it's funny because the radio market size when I came here was market 59. It's now market 79, I think. Just because I guess people, you know, either dying or moving out of the area
mm-hmm
at that particular point.
Right.
So yeah, you talk about how you're doing more with less. Is it tough? You know, you get new people that are coming in all the time. And I believe me, I say the same thing each and every day. We do. We get some young people who have no experience where years ago, I know what I went through to get a job here. You know, I had to have a pretty decent resume already. But is that the way it's going, you think, nationally?
Well, it's hard to say nationally, but I think in markets of comparable size,
yeah, medium size,
this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you would have heard back in the day of what is called an MMJ, multimedia journalist. It's kind of an iffy term that they place on someone. What it means is they're a multitasking journalist.
Right.
They're going out, they're doing all the interviews, they're shooting all of the video, they're putting together the story, and they are reporting the story. So they're a one-man band.
So back in the day, though, if you go back a few years, it was basically you would write the story, report it, but someone else would be the camera person and someone else would edit?
And so I still have that benefit when I'm
right
reporting. I report 3 days a week. I anchor two nights a week. So you're right. I do have that benefit of having a photographer with me, but there aren't many crews built that way these days.
And I remember seeing over the years, a lot of times when, you know, BRE would come in to do a segment on the radio station or whatever, I would always see the same camera guy over the years. And, you know, now you don't really see that anymore
because right
one by one, unfortunately, they're dwindling these guys out. Talk about some of the big people that went on. I know when I moved to Philly, all of a sudden I started seeing names popping up at the NBC affiliate there. That, wait a minute, I know that person
from
Wilkes-Barre.
Goodness, right. Yeah, well, we've had several both in front of the camera and behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Dawn Timoney the most. Dawn
yeah
had anchored rose through the ranks. We hired her in 1988. I still remember that. And she rose from the ranks of reporter to weekend anchor reporter to five-night-a-week anchor. And then WBRE and Dawn parted ways, and then she ended up in the Philadelphia market, I think first at NBC 10.
Yeah, I think NBC 10. I think now she's at Fox.
Fox 29?
Yeah, last I right heard she was at Fox.
Right. Stacey Weaver is also someone.
I remember
well,
the name.
You're going to know her better these days by Stacey Stauffer. You will
okay
see her on QVC.
Okay, yeah.
So she has gotten out of the news business, being a journalist, and she is now working at QVC. So she is someone I co-anchored with on the morning years ago in the early 2000s.
So you launched them.
I propelled them.
Yeah, you sent them on their way into their career. I know it's funny because I've had a lot of people that worked me over the years and ended up in these, you know, incredible positions. Had nothing to do with me, but it is kind of cool to work with somebody who's very young and then they really eager to jump and move markets, and you see them, you know, going to Washington, D.C. or different areas. It's kind of neat, you know. It's a compliment to yourself when you see them move up.
And I've got to hand it to you and folks like you that you've got that, I don't know if it's wanderlust, but you've got that adventurous side to you that you're willing to work in different markets. You know, I never really wanted to leave my home.
Yeah.
I'm just a homebody. It's just,
well, my problem was,
fortunate.
I mean, I probably would have loved to stay in my home market. Unfortunately for me, my home market was New York City, which is the cream of the crop. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to start, you know, at a New York City radio station and maybe as an intern, but that would be about it. So, and I've been very fortunate. I've been back to work to New York stations, you know, part-time, but nothing major, but that was my goal. I want wanted to be back in my home market so my friends could hear me one time. I mean, most of them didn't hear. They weren't listening. They weren't up that early.
Well, now the beauty of the internet, right?
They can hear you. Thanks to radio.com.
That's fantastic.
They can catch me anywhere. So, like, what is your next plan? Like, what do you... I don't plan on retiring. Everybody asks me, when are you going to retire? I don't have that in my mind right now. I want to go as long as I can go.
The only thing that would appeal to me about retiring would be to travel. But to travel, you need to have money.
Right.
To have money, you kind of need
to work. So you're going to be doing that for a while.
I haven't done a lot of travel, right? So I don't foresee any time in the any near future where
Michelle and I have talked about that all the time. It's like, well, we should move here. We should do this. Really, how are we going to pay for all this? Because we have kids, and we'll get into that in a second. And obviously, the kids keep... You know, draining the money out of you little by little. You had a pretty big health scare a few years ago. Tell us about that.
Yes. Kind of out of the blue, too. I am a lector at St. Anne's Basilica, and I just finished reading at Mass and had come home. And I started feeling a sensation in my hand. It was kind of a tingling and a numbness. It was cold. It was January. It was a Sunday. It was NFL playoff day.
Yeah.
So I complained to my wife, Beth, and I said, I feel a little sensation. And she said, well, I feel that when I wear gloves in the cold. And I said, but I wasn't wearing gloves. So I dismissed it and went upstairs and got changed out of my Sunday best into my, you know, what I call my slum wear.
Yeah. Sitting around the house watching football.
Sweatpants and a ratty football sweatshirt. As I was coming down the stairs, I felt dizzy and... Then I thought I was going to black out. And when I tried to speak, my speech was all slurred and garbled. And
how old were you when this happened?
54.
Yeah.
And I knew the symptoms of a stroke. And I told my wife as best I could, I think I'm having a stroke. So I didn't trust that the ambulance would arrive in time, which in hindsight, if we have time, I can get into that, why that was a mistake. But... I didn't get burned by my mistake. We got to the hospital in short order, probably 15 minutes. And then by the time they assembled their stroke team, they had this clot-busting medication that can only be administered within the first few hours running through my veins. It broke up the clot in my brain. It reversed everything because, Doc, I had the slurred speech. I had the numbness in the arm. I could feel the drooping of the face. It was terrifying.
Scary.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
At first, I was just fearful for my career, thinking I'm never going to be able to do this again. And then reality was setting in, and I didn't know if I was going to survive this.
Yeah.
And a couple of days in intensive care, and a couple of days in a semi-private room, and a few weeks of healing. And I'm in that such a slim 1%, I would say, or less, that really has no residual impact of this because it was a severe.
You would never know. I mean,
no, I just have a slight numbness in my my right cheek. That's it.
And they say that'll be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, how scary is that, though?
Very, very scary.
You know, I couldn't imagine. And then you're thinking same thing. Or, oh, well, maybe it's just my hand. Now I'm starting to feel something else. And you're braver than me. You'll tell you what, like, I'm petrified of going to doctors. Mm. So, I mean, I will, for me to go to a doctor and say, take me to the hospital, and it's happened a few times over the years, I really got to be feeling bad. Otherwise, I'll be like, it'll just go away. I'll take an aspirin or something.
You know, I took a call from a viewer. Her husband just suffered a stroke within the past couple of weeks of us sitting down here. That was her complaint about men. Men are stubborn, and I can't disagree. We've got that gene. I don't know what it is. We just, you know, but in that moment, I knew that I needed help. I knew I was in trouble.
But it's good you did it, because you said this could have been much worse had you waited.
The thing about stroke is that time equals brain. You lose nearly 2 million brain cells a minute when that blood flow is impeded to the brain. And so I'm lucky that it's just a little, you know, numbness. I could always blame my mom for pinching my cheeks. If
do you still go for like physical therapy, or you're good at this point?
No, I'm on medication the rest of my life. And what it has made me do, it's made me more conscious of investing in my health, which is something I did up until I would say my mid 40s, and then I kind of backed off from all of the good things I was probably doing. So
I did, you know, same thing. I didn't have that, but. When I was, how long ago was this? About 4 years ago? Yeah, I guess about 4 or 5 years ago. just around Christmas time, wasn't feeling well. I was feeling lightheaded a lot of times, and I gained weight. I was like 255 pounds, and I'm only 5'11", and just not feeling right. So lightheaded, and I'd be driving, and I'm feeling like, oh, I'm not drunk. Maybe I have an inner ear infection or something. I go to the doctor just to get checked out, and they do blood work and everything. And the first thing is the blood pressure, and I was 150 over 100.
Ooh.
Not thinking anything, and the guy goes, you're going to be dead here very soon if you don't start taking care of yourself. And then they did the blood work and found out I had diabetes. I didn't know I had diabetes. But I was on the lower end. I was, so type 2 diabetes. And, you know, the work will put you on this and these different things. I said, well, if I don't want to go on, what do I have to do? Well, you have to make serious change in your life about the way you're going to do things. And I was able to do it. I'm through diet, and I ended up losing. So I'm still overweight for where I should be. I mean, I read the other day, which I don't know if I'll ever go down to that. I'm 5'11", and I'm supposed to be, the primo weight is 175. Well, now I'm like 220. You know, I'm down 30, almost 40 pounds from what I was a few years ago. But yeah, I don't think I'll ever get down to my my game weight, my high school graduation weight of 175, 180 back there.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. When I graduated from high school, because I'm a tall guy, I'm 6'5", I weighed 145 pounds. I went to a nutritionist to try to gain weight back then.
You must have looked like a number 2 pencil when you were standing up.
Maybe only number 1.
At that particular point.
I used to joke when I weighed 245, which that would be a nice goal to strive for now, because I weigh more than that. I used to joke that when I got out of high school, I gained 1 inch. Who knew that 1 inch would weigh 100 pounds?
Yeah, look what that has done. That's crazy. So where did you meet your wife? I know we only have a few minutes left because you have an exciting day ahead of you. You got to go get a root canal. Huh?
Oh, my goodness. I think I lead the league in root canal. This is about the fifth one I think I'm about to have done. I met my wife through church. And it's funny, we were friends for 4 years and never really thought of her romantically. And then... I don't know, just our paths just crossed in such a way that all of a sudden we started seeing each other that way.
And that's nice.
So we began dating in 1984, got engaged in 1987, been married now for 31 years. She's given me the greatest gifts that I always say are our children, Matthew, Melissa, and Sarah. Matt is 28, Melissa's 26, Sarah's 20, and then Matt is the father of my two grandchildren, David and Evelyn.
So, you know, the whole reason we do this is, you know, it's called the Dad Pod, which is a play on the Dad Bod, but it's also because I'm a dad and you're a dad, and everybody I'm going to talk to when we do this is a dad. And I want to talk about like some of the incredible things about being a dad. What's like some of your favorite stuff or some of your favorite memories with your kids?
Oh, gosh. Well, it starts at when I was 30 is when we had Matt. Just how it just changed my level of self-confidence and awareness and responsibility.
So I think most people think, and I remember when Jessie, before she got pregnant, and she's like, oh, we're not ready, we're going to do this. I said, you're never ready to have a baby. When it happens, though, you make it all happen and you adjust your lifestyle. And she is. She's going through that right now where things are great.
Oh, that's good for her. Yeah. And that's what I was telling you before about that insecurity about not knowing if the timing is right. You know, right. I think of that John Lennon song, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And it's true.
Yeah.
But it changed my life in so many great ways. Oh, my goodness. Just every day was fun. I never wanted my children to leave the house. So we still have Sarah at home, and I'm thrilled about that. But my daughter, my older daughter, Melissa, she's a teacher in the Las Vegas area. So I miss her dearly.
Right. But how often do you get to see her? Maybe once a year?
No, a couple. She's been very good. She's been in a few times. In fact, she's coming in for Father's Day, which is fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah. So she's been good. She's been coming in a couple times a year. We have yet to get out to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So we need to do that. But just every day is fun. I consider Matt my best friend. You know, we're always texting each other about sports or something like that. And Melissa and I, Melissa has my sense of humor, so we bond pretty well there. And I've got Sarah at home. I mean, every day is a blessing. I just, you know, just love being a father.
I'm exactly like you because I have the three, and occasionally we'll get all three together. And when we do, it's just like I'll sit back and just like watch the show, as you know, and the show being the three kids and what they're doing in their lives and stuff like that. So I'm more of like a spectator, but it's so, you know, you sometimes somebody goes, why don't you guys go out or why don't you guys do it? And I'm like you, when the kids are around, it's the greatest feeling ever.
It really is.
You feel complete. You feel like everything's going great, you know?
And I feel like a kid. I mean, they make me feel like a kid.
Yeah.
And I've always felt they've kept me kind of hip and current. And so I cannot ever let Sarah leave the house.
And they'll let you know when you're unhip and not current and stuff like that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I always joke that my oldest is 28, that I've been embarrassing my kids for 28 years.
Yeah, no, it's exactly what it is. is. What are you doing? So your Father's Day, your daughter, you said, is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? What other plans?
Well, for Father's Day itself, we're having a cookout, and the whole family will be there, which is fantastic, because those days are rare, especially now with, you know, with
That's
having
great.
A daughter living so far away.
Sounds, and tell me about the grandkids again.
David is 5. He just finished preschool, so he'll be enrolled in kindergarten in the fall.
Yeah.
He's as smart as a whip. Oh, my goodness. And like, you know, he's like that old soul trapped in a little
yeah,
guy's
yeah,
body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And funny.
5 going on 50.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, exactly. And Evelyn has her land legs now. She's discovered walking several months ago, and just adorable. And just, oh my goodness, they just fill your heart.
Yeah.
I actually reached for my heart just then. I mean, they just fill your heart.
I'm looking forward. I have no grandchildren yet. So we have, you know, Sean, who is my youngest boy, who just started working in radio, and he's in state college. And then my older guy's in Philadelphia. That's Christian. Christian's 28 right now. And then we became foster parents like almost 2 years ago to Julia. And Julia now is officially ours, but she graduates this week from high school, and then she's off to Westchester University in September, well, actually August.
Oh my word.
So we have, you know, like so many things going
on.
That
is so fantastic.
Yeah, that's a neat story. I'll tell you real quick, but my wife is a teacher in Hazleton, and the whole Julia story, how that all came about, was the way the foster system works in the state of Pennsylvania. I never knew this. And we knew nothing about it. We were perfectly content with 2 kids and going on with our lives. And our whole thing was, now we're going to be able to date again and go back out and do our, you know, happy husband and wife things. And she heard about one of the counselors was saying, oh, it's so tough on some of these kids. We have this great kid here who's a great student, and now she may get moved somewhere else in the state of Pennsylvania because of a change
oh,
in the
boy.
Home. And Michelle goes, I don't know what made me say it, but I just said, oh, I'd like to meet her, meaning just to meet her. And absolutely fell in love with her. And I remember Michelle calling me, and I was here, and she called me and goes, what do you think about becoming a foster dad? And I'm like, well, sure, why not? You know, it's one of those things. I knew nothing about it. And, you know, there was a lot you have to go through to learn as to what to do. But it was also one of the greatest things. And, you know, she's our forever daughter now at this point.
Oh, that's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And doing great.
Michelle.
Thank you.
That is so great.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're looking forward to Father's Day. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully everybody's around for the weekend. I know some of them are in. I don't know if my older guy's going to be in or not. But I am. And like I said, I love doing this type thing because I'm a dad, and I like to talk to other dads about all the stuff they love about their kids. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming in today.
What a pleasure, Doc. I enjoyed swapping stories with you.
This is fun.
And I know you're a great dad. I can just tell because you're a great man.
I thank you so much. And I do. I love it every day. And I notice the same in you. And you and I were talking at the telethon the other day, and then we realized our kids are about the same age. Like, oh my God, we have parallel lives. We're kind of leading here.
Exactly. And I can also tell, you mentioned the telethon, just about your involvement in this year's Children's Miracle Network telethon, your sincerity and your love of children. It showed.
Thank you.
And thank you.
I appreciate it. Mark Hiller from WBRE Eyewitness News. Thank you so much for coming in.
Such a pleasure, Doc. You're welcome.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.